Hi everyone, welcome to DebSoc. Joining me today are John T and Christopher. Just a bit of background for the podcast. We all attended school together. We were all members of debating society, and we used to debate every week. Some of us chaired, and we just decided to make a podcast where we debate topics and current events and things like that. Before we get into anything, I feel like we should, just introduce ourselves. John T, do you want to go first? What are you doing at the moment? What do you study?
Cool. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me on, Reese. So, as Reese said, we're going to be talking about different political issues each week and stuff. Any issues in the world. I went to school with these two here in the studio with us. I am a historian undergraduate at the University of Cambridge. I'm specialising in a whole range of things, but mostly political history in the 20th century. I write and have a blog, which I'll shamelessly push on everyone who's listening later, and that's about
Chris?
Hi, my name is Christopher, and I am an undergraduate at Bates College in Maine, and I'm very much looking forward to discussing the general election today.
Come on, Chris, a little bit more about yourself. Like, what do you study? Like, what do you how's America?
Well, hopefully I'll major in politics in 4 years' time.
Okay,
4 years. That's 4 years.
Yeah, it's a 4 year course. Okay, and I'm Reese. I'm currently on my gap year. I'm hoping to study politics with something, dependent, on which uni next year. I'm currently just working part-time job and going on a fitness instruction course, which is one of my other passions, fitness, which no one in the course seems to share with me, but as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about current affairs and things, but as we just passed the 100-day milestone to the general election, I feel like that should be our main topic for today. So, John T, what do you think the key issue is that's going to define this election?
Well, I think the key issue is obviously the economy. There are two versions of the economy that the two main parties are putting forward, and a third version of the economy, which is the one that the voters actually want. So the version of the economy that the Tories have put forward in the past 5 years is basically this narrative, which is that there was a global financial crisis and it was caused by the Labour Party borrowing too much, and therefore we need to cut the state a lot. Right? That's one argument. And the way they've done that is by attacking the poor. Now I'm not passing a moral judgment on that, but that's what they've done. There's been the biggest cut since the 30s on the state. The vision by the Labour Party is the same, but slightly less. That's the Labour vision of the economy. But slightly less. With lots of welfare cuts, but slightly less. Then there's the vision that the public actually want, which is a fair plan, which doesn't cut the state too much. And when it does, actually, make creates a fairer society at the same time. So the vision of the economy that the people want of this country is the vision articulated by the SNP and by the Green Party.
Yeah,
And
but
it's
the
very
Green Party
interesting.
also wants 80% tax, so there's
And suddenly,
clauses in each party, really.
and that's what I think the is interesting at this debate is election is it's a debate between austerity and more austerity, and I don't think the voters really want either. I don't know
Yeah.
what you guys make of that austerity hawks.
I think that's a fair argument, but I don't know if
I don't think.
I think that the approaches are a little bit different. I think if you'd said a couple of years ago, yeah, they're going to be the same, then I would have agreed with you. But I think it's kind of been forced to go a little bit. Like I saw on the news, I saw him talking about healthcare and this whole huge budget he's going to bring out to get more nurses on staff. And like I think the the reporter summed it up well when she said, yeah, they'd like Labour running the NHS, but the Conservatives running the economy, because I feel like generally under the current government, the economy hasn't done too bad. Nothing's gone spiraling out of control. If anything, a lot of industries are picking up, especially in London. And the way I see the rest of the country is that if London picks up, other places do pick up too. If you've got like, I mean, if you go to London right now, you will see a huge number of buildings going up. Like, the construction industry is ridiculous at the moment. It's crazy. And that's only a good sign for business coming to London, because who's going to live in those massive buildings? Who's going to work in those massive buildings? You know, I think that's... They're rich, yeah. No, and this is where... But this is the unfortunate problem with London.
You're right, you're right. There is an economic recovery for the rich in the south.
No. There is a recovery for everyone. Our economy right now is producing more jobs than it did even before the recession.
Yeah, and these are jobs for everyone. Where are the jobs, Chris?
Jobs are all around the country. And you listen to the Prime Minister and you look at the statistics, the recovery in terms of jobs is spread out very well. In terms of whether those wages are catching up with prices, that's a little bit more difficult. Yeah, in terms of mapping out across the country, but that's where we're headed, and that's why the call is to stick with the current plan, because we know that we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the thing is, Chris, is that they have created a million new jobs, and that's fantastic, and we should all just vote Tory.
And that we are still creating jobs.
That is until you understand what those a million jobs new are. Of those a million new jobs, it's estimated that 750,000 could be classified as underemployment, as in they're not paying people a living wage. It's no good having a job if it doesn't actually pay your bills. What we've had created in the last 30 or so years, if you just let me finish, is a low-wage economy. We have huge amounts of people working on jobs that don't pay their bills. And so for the government to say, because we've created jobs, everything is fine, the jobs aren't good enough. People can't pay their bills. And that's
They aren't good enough because the economy the government inherited wasn't good enough to fund anything that was going to come out of either government. I mean, I think everybody knew that whatever jobs were to be created in a government after 2010 would be very low funded, because the economy had no money and the economy had no confidence.
It's interesting you're talking about sort of confidence and restoring credibility to the government. In 2010, do you remember when George Osborne said, judge me on the government's rating, right? Yeah, judge me on how well the economy is viewed internationally. And then under George Osborne, we lost our AAA credit rating.
But the IMF recently has said that we're heading in the right direction, and so has President Obama.
Yeah, but how long, John T. Emus knows, how long was it since we lost our AAA credit rating?
We haven't. We've down their rating system.
We've never lost it, yeah.
So no, that's probably first time under a Conservative government.
Yeah, that's probably not good.
But I mean, that has changed. I mean, as you can see right now, in terms of what Rhys was saying, confidence in London particularly is very high, and it's going across the country, and investment in Britain is really high in comparison to the rest of Europe. The economy of the UK is growing at an incredibly fast rate when you compare it to Europe, and that's directly an effect of the policies that the government has introduced.
Yeah, but I think, again, I don't want to accuse anyone of naive. Actually, no, I do. Yeah, Chris, you're being naive with the stats.
Oh, Chris is being naive. Newsflash.
GDP as a fact in of itself isn't enough. Again, the point is that...
I agree with you that it isn't enough, John T, but I'm trying to tell you that you can't expect the jobs to be well-funded when we had an economic mess in 2010 and we had a huge economic recession. It's just, I mean, I think you're being naive in expecting that. And in expecting companies to be able to fund the living wage, now it's just not feasible.
Okay, so if that's the case, it seems like we could debate all day that it's not, right? That
the
economy...
saying the same thing in different clothing all the time.
So let's accept your point that the economy was in such a bad situation that it couldn't produce decent paying jobs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? What then should a government do? Should it cut state aid and say it's fine, the economy will provide jobs, which you just said won't happen, or should it completely cut away the safety net for people?
Well, I mean, cutting the safety net is part of allowing the government to be able to cut down deficits in order to later be able to cut down debt and to restore confidence in the economy, so that at some point we would be able to reach a stage where we can have jobs that are well funded, and an economy that is sort of fair for all. But right now we can't have that because like the shock, the economic shock that we had in 2008 and in the later years just don't allow the economy to do that.
Yeah, Jonty, I feel like that's also a very like we're slowly getting deeper and deeper into this question. I mean, what you effectively asked there is, should we have a safety net at all? And that's a very, very
No,
in-depth question.
the answer is obviously yes.
Well, people would disagree with you, of course.
You would disagree with me that there should be that we shouldn't have a safety net?
Well, Chris is a libertarian, I believe. Like, I'd believe that.
Well, I
My
think.
understanding of libertarianism is that they wouldn't agree with the safety net, and I'm verging on the disbelief of the existence of a safety net, but like
What happens when there's no safety net? When there's no welfare state to back people up? What happens?
I haven't worked it out. That's why I'm
There
saying I'm verging.
are many things.
I'm
There are
not
many
sure.
things that need to happen. There are many things that need to happen before politicians and political scientists can start to say that we shouldn't have a safety net. But in a perfect world, I think that not having a safety net would mean that we have a society where people are more in touch with their own personal sort of ability to do things and are
Right.
not held back by a culture of dependency that sort of trickles down from the state into society.
No, that's a
Yeah,
really
I
important
think
point.
the point there is basically blaming people for being poor, Chris. That's exactly
Well,
what.
I think
No,
that's
let me
in
finish.
some
That
in
that's
some
the constitutional
No, I'm
question.
blaming the government for people being poor.
Yeah, but you're saying that once you start giving benefits to people, right? They don't take responsibility. There's a culture of dependency. They become
But that's not
trapped
their
in this
fault.
welfare system, right? People want to work. People want to earn their own
But
money.
they can't.
I actually have a really differing view to you guys, and I'm obviously going to get a lot of flak for this because I've developed this since you guys, this is a fairly recent development for me. But I think that when you start, I think it's quite insulting when you say that people are not in control of their circumstances. I think it's really insulting, personally, because we're
Like,
saying, oh yeah, the government's made them poor, the government's done this to them. Well, did they actually have absolutely no say in anything that happened? I think that's insulting to their ability,
I don't
personally,
think
of
that's
human capacity to say that, well, these people are poor because they're the government made them, or the government didn't do enough, or the government. I think to a certain extent we have to take responsibility for all our actions, and we can say, oh yeah, it's not our fault all day, but that doesn't change anything. But anyway, sorry, that's the track. That's a tangent. I'll bring it back. So, Jonty,
Can I
what do you
ask?
think of the
Wait, can I just ask you both a
yeah.
question on that note, right?
Yeah.
So I've just got up here an article which says that at the moment in Middlesbrough in the northeast, unemployment is at 16%. Right?
Yeah.
There aren't enough jobs in Middlesbrough. Right? Middlesbrough's in the northeast of England for all our
Yeah,
international
yeah.
people. There aren't enough jobs up there. And you have people who, because there aren't enough jobs, or because the jobs they're in don't pay well enough, who need the state to provide them with healthcare, who need the state to provide them with food, right? Now, how is that a culture of dependency? How is that the evil big government encroaching on people? What it actually is government helping people because the economy that's rigged for the 1% won't. The eco wealth does trickle down. That's the point, guys. Right? What we've seen in the past 30 years of this idea that wealth will trickle down is a situation where the richest 80 families control half of the world's wealth. Now
No, I
that
do
doesn't
agree with that. I think
Now
that's a
that doesn't make
ridiculous notion,
bad
personally.
socialist to say that wealth obviously isn't trickling down at the moment.
No, I think, first of all, I don't think that we should be bothered about whether a small percentage of families own a certain amount of wealth,
Well, it bothers me.
as long as the median, as long as sort of the average lifestyle is something that we can find acceptable. And I think that if you look at countries that have
But
followed
what we find acceptable changes decade on decade. Christopher,
If you look at countries that have followed a capitalist model and countries that have followed supply-side economics, you will see that their standards of living are overall, and even the standards of living of the very poorest, are overall far better than of any other country which hasn't.
Except in Britain, where real living standards have gone down for the past 15 years.
So living standards is a concept that has been ever changing since like the 1830s. The required living standard and what is viewed as acceptable and what's viewed as squalor and poor has always been changing. For example, I'll give you an example. When my mum first came to this country, she was in the 1970s. No, 68. She came to it in 68. And she lived in a flat that shared a bathroom with four other flats. And the bathroom was outside of the flat, and it just about had running hot water. Since the 1968, we're now in 2015. Can you imagine a situation like that now? And bear in mind, that's like...
Yes, I can, actually. I can imagine it for the 2 million families who have to use food banks. I can imagine
a
it really
food bank
well.
Isn't the same as an outdoor bathroom, Jonty. It's not quite the same. The constraints of social housing are completely different now, because they've advanced, because what we view as acceptable and not acceptable have changed. And yeah, I don't agree. Yeah, obviously needing food banks is a terrible thing. But
social housing is also a terrible thing. I can't.
Why is social housing a bad thing, Chris?
No, I mean, if you look at instances of social housing, particularly in North London, you'll see that they are breeding grounds for dependency and breeding grounds for crime and social problems. And governments refuse to do anything about it because they fear precisely that we'll have a conversation where people like you, Jonty, will accuse the government of deliberately meddling in a situation in an uncompassionate way.
So what's your alternative to the housing problem?
I think before we talk about an alternative, I think we have to understand what is the issue with the housing problem, or what is the reason that this dependency culture has arisen? Why
disagree with dependency culture? I think it's a ridiculous and loaded term.
Okay, Jonty, would you accept that there are some people out there who are not trying their hardest to find a job?
Even about whether they try their hardest or not. It's about the fact that it's a barrier. Like, even if you want to, you cannot.
I think, first of all, Reese, ONS figures from last year show that 0.7% of benefits are fraudulently given out, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a problem.
You know, that the idea of unemployment, you know, you get benefits if you're unemployed, is frankly complete bullshit, because actually 60% of benefits go to people in work. 60% of benefits go to people who have a job, but the job isn't good enough. Why isn't the job good enough? Because in an economy where you put corporate profit above anything else, big companies can give extortionately low wages so that the wealth doesn't trickle down, right?
No, I mean, I think that in that instance, it's definitely an incentive not to educate yourself further, not to try harder and find a better job. And it's an incentive for sort of companies themselves not to pay high wages to those people who are in benefits in the first place.
Yeah, I think sometimes you just have to strip everything back for a minute and think of it in the simplest possible terms. Some people are poor. Some people are rich. The government comes along and tries to take from the rich and give to the poor, right? Mm-hmm. And then people turn around and say, you know what? Those poor people are poor because they're not good enough. And that's...
Nobody has said that in this conversation.
Stop taking my money. It is that simple.
No, because we wouldn't want the money of the people who have earned it and are on benefits to be taken away either. It's a principle that the money that you earn should be yours, and it shouldn't be distributed in any other way that you do not consent to.
And bear in mind that the government is the only institution in the entire world that can kill you for not paying tax. for not giving
exactly.
money.
Exactly. So, I mean,
I don't see how that's relevant because our government doesn't kill people.
Well, like, no, but if you, because no, everyone pays tax and everyone complies to force, like if people, very few people resist arrest, and those that do would probably get severely hurt. that's the nature of resisting arrest. And tax evasion is a crime, and it's an imprisonable offence.
Okay, so do you now want to talk about the nature of the state and civil liberties? Is that where you're leading us?
No, I want to talk about I want to talk about immigration now.
Yeah, I feel
like we've done this topic to the end, and we can't get anywhere further without going into a whole load of things that we really don't want to step into.
I just want to finish this point about the economy.
Just give a summary. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I'd just like to give a summary of my argument, which is basically the government has had a choice in the past 5 years about who needs to be responsible for the problems in this country. And instead of a more fair society in which they've taxed people who can afford it, they have chosen, ideologically chosen, to disproportionately hurt the wealthy, hurt the poor, the disabled, women, and the unemployed. And that is that is what has happened under austerity. And I think that the worst thing you can do is say, yes, but we have to cut the state because people are dependent. Go to the cancer state in the north. Go there and tell people that they are trapped in a culture of dependency. And they will laugh in your face and say, I'm looking for work, but there isn't enough work. That's not my fault. That's the fault of the government.
Chris?
I mean,
you'll get the last.
I'm gonna try and compromise a little bit with Jonty here in the sense that I think that it is true that there is a problem with finding jobs, and that's not something that we can deny. But I think in terms of the political substance of it, whichever government came into power in 2010 would have had to cut benefits in some way or another. Like it would just. It had to happen. In terms of the principle of it, I think that it is important that we cut benefits, and I think that it is important because, as I said, I think it just creates a culture where people are not allowed to fulfill their own potentials, and they're not allowed to even see what they are, let alone reach them properly.
Yeah. I feel like what this argument boiled down to, just to summarize, is what we ended up getting to is does money find itself in the hands of people who want it most? I think that's an important question for you guys listening at home. If you want, like, consider that, you know, is that a true statement at all? Is it completely wrong? Is there an extent to which it's true? You know, I think that's a really important question. But let's get on to immigration, which I feel like is one of the most important defining issues of this current election. So, Chris, do you want to?
Well, I would agree with you, actually. I think that regrettably, it is actually a huge issue, and it really sort of disappoints me, and it makes me really sad whenever I look at a poll and it says that the number one issue for people in Britain in this election is immigration, because the way that the debate has occurred in Britain is not really a debate about whether we should have immigration or not. It's not a debate on whether on who we should on the merits of the people that we should let in and those that we should not. It's been entirely underpinned by racial prejudice, and I think it's just, and it's also become a part of this whole sort of larger narrative that particularly UKIP has been pushing, and also in some sections of the Conservative Party, that some people from Europe are just not good enough to come to Britain under any circumstances, and that some people from outside of the European Union also aren't good enough to come to Britain. And yet, at the same time, there isn't a fair immigration policy that tries to distinguish between the people that we want to come in and those that we don't on the basis of skills. And that's something that's not going to change under a conservative government, unless we leave the European Union. And it's not going to change under a UKIP government either, because UKIP will want to stick to the line of racial prejudice, because that is the line that attracts votes from the sects of society that they are trying to reach. And I think that it is a huge issue. I don't think that it's being talked about in the right way. And I think as an immigrant, I feel that the entire debate is really hypocritical, and I think that many other immigrants feel the same way too.
I actually, funnily enough, despite what I was like at school, I actually really agree with most of what Chris said. I think there's a very, very, very small number of people who come into this country, and notice the, you know, emphasis on the word very, very small, because there are a tiny proportion of people who come into this country and they either work here and send money home, or they abuse our healthcare and welfare and benefit system. I think that's a small number of people. I feel like the large population of immigrants comes into this country. They either build businesses, which again creates jobs for us, or they produce, that they give to the economy. They pay their taxes. They contribute to society. They don't. And as well, like, I think there's also only a small number of people who have these kind of like salad bowl-esque little communities where they only talk to each other. I feel like society now, especially, is starting to get into that wider feel of we are a community of British people. And there's been a bit of tension, especially with the Islamic population of the country, who feel slightly, I think they feel slightly alienated by the reaction of the far right to, you know, issues of you know, like radical Islam and things like that. And to be honest, I feel like they're completely justified in their alienation, especially because, you know, us and America have put boots on the ground in numerous Muslim countries without real care or concern or consent from the people. But yeah, I think that generally the immigration should, you know, I think that the vast majority of people who come to this country are meritable, and I think they deserve to be here, and I think they earn their right to be here. Personally, John T, do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I'll try and be brief so we can get into a conversation. But basically, I think there's a very interesting book called "On the Right," and it profiles UKIP voters, and it shows that most of them are the old white working class between the ages of 55 and 65. And what it shows is that they can remember a time where their communities had industrial jobs, and when they had those jobs, the world was very simple. Britain wasn't in Europe yet. They had these old traditional mining jobs, and the world was like that, right? Then, over the next 50 years, the kind of British political class moved away from both Tory and Labour, became more middle class, became more privileged, became more based in London. And at the same time, under Thatcher and under New Labour, sadly, and under this government, the communities that these people recognised, their jobs, their welfare state, was ripped apart. And when they looked around for someone to blame, as is the oldest political statement, goes all the way back to the Bible, you blame. So I think that the problem about immigration is part of a much wider group of people in society, and it's been stoked up by the media massively. So I think that immigration is not actually about immigration, it's a proxy for deeper issues.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And frankly, it also disappoints me as a conservative that this seems to be an even bigger issue among conservatives of all ages. The Conservative Party has been having debates about this for a very long time. And I think that really the idea of a society that allows people to enter its economy and compete for jobs, no matter who they are, should be something that I think every conservative should be very excited about. And if we believe in the powers of capitalism, and if we believe in the powers of a society that doesn't discriminate on the basis of race or origin, and we know that we have an economy that can accommodate a wide range of skills and professions, then I think that we should be definitely moving away from stringent border controls. But even if we do need to have, even if we do need to have them, I think that the consensus should be to move towards a fair policy for everyone. And if we are going to discriminate on the basis of skill, then people from the European Union should also be subject to those restrictions and to those tests.
Yeah, but at the same time, I believe in the European project. I think that when Europe was ripped apart by war in the 1930s and 1940s, that a wider Europe is an admirable, noble goal. Now, I don't believe in monetary union, because I believe that that is, leads to political union, and I don't believe that Britain should be part of that. Maybe I would like it personally, but I don't think the rest of the country would.
Yeah, you'd like it because most of Europe is fairly social democrat, and we are.
Yeah, but I'm saying I wouldn't like that for the country. I've admitted that.
But wait, Jonty, how can you define
this? Let me finish.
The one issue I do think we should be completely open with Europe is on immigration, because I think that's the way the world is going.
How can you defend the system when we are only open? I mean, how can you defend that on principle? Why Europe and why not the rest of the world?
Because Chris, we need to take small steps, and you've seen.
But
how,
why because... does Europe have to be the first place?
You just asked a question. I'm trying to answer. Okay, so Europe is obviously geographically our closest neighbour. We've always had a huge amount of interactions with Europe going throughout history. Wars, peace treaties, more wars, money changing hands, all of it revolved around Europe. Europe has always been a central area for us.
We are,
in the last 70, 80 years.
Seems to me
years
that that's an
has...
extremely anachronistic view of a reason for why we should allow immigration from Europe to be
No, you're not letting me finish, Chris. That's one point. Okay, so first of all, it's geographically we've always been like that. Secondly, I think we all understand, despite all our views on immigration, we understand that it can have destabilizing effects, not only due to the people coming in, but the reaction of those currently living here. There has been a huge outcry for caps on immigration, and there always has been. There's always been that side, because people naturally, some people just don't like change.
Those caps are very, very inefficient and very useless.
But I don't think that opening immigration up to the entire world would be beneficial in like we have it in the EU.
Why don't you control it for Europe too?
Because I think it's a small scale project that's in progress, and eventually
I hope we can
open it to the whole world. But I don't think we're quite ready for that yet. I think that reform needs to come in steps. And in order to get into this global state kind of idea where we can all move freely, I think we first have to deal with Europe and settle Europe. And once we can all move freely within Europe and that works, then we can think about branching out. But until then, I don't think so.
All right. But for both of you then, we don't have to answer the global question. But do tell me why it is fair for someone who has a very low set of skills from Europe to go into Britain without any checks, without any control, while someone from South America, who has a very, very high set of skills, needs to go through a very, very stringent checking process with the Home Office. How is that fair?
It's not fair, and I understand entirely where you're coming from. It's not fair, but it's the best we can work with at the moment. Can you imagine what would happen if we literally opened our gates to every country in the world, like no stringent immigration at all?
You don't have to do that.
So what are you suggesting?
Well, I'd say that we also put some borders in Europe.
If we can't
liberalize the entire thing,
do you not agree that we should freely be able to move from place to place? Is that not your ideal? Would you
rather that is my ideal, but since you say that that's impossible, then I think that it should be fair for everyone.
Impossible. I said it wasn't possible yet. It's a work in progress.
Okay. Chris,
that's what I'm saying.
You know that currently there are 2 million European nationals living in Britain, right?
Yeah,
that's quite a lot. Yeah.
There are currently 2.2 British nationals living in Europe.
Yeah.
So surely the price we pay for being able to live in Europe is to have people from Europe, because we are one community.
No, I think countries in Europe, other countries in Europe, are facing the same questions and are asking the same questions in terms of immigration, and it seems to me that it would be a good answer for everyone to just sort of be less hypocritical about it, and just have a rule that fits for everyone, because it seems to me logical. It's economically unreasonable. It's socially kind of offensive. I just don't understand why we need to have this sort of two-tier system where Europeans are just preferred over anyone who isn't.
John, to go back to what you said about 2 million, like Europeans living in England and in the UK, and like 2 million Brits living in the rest of the EU. I just to play devil's advocate a bit. I bet if you took like the amount of Brits living in Romania and Bulgaria, and took the amount of Romanians and Bulgarians and that are living in Britain, and compared those two figures, I think you would have a bit of a disparity there. And I think that that shows kind of the idea of, you know, where people want to live and, you know, where the economies are strongest. And that is the issue at the moment that we're facing, you know, that
Yeah,
we,
so
us and Germany, have.
the implication in that, right, is that many immigrants are a drain on our benefit system,
No,
right?
I'm not implicating that
Because
at all. I'm just.
then the facts speak louder than the rest of it.
Jonty, you're
Immigrants
putting
are.
words in my mouth, to be fair.
Right, go on.
I'm try what I was trying to say is that naturally, as you would, I think all three of us would, if we grew up in a fairly poor country, and we were fairly, you know, not that well off, and we had the opportunity to move to a country with a strong economy and a strong, and a strong, you know, system of government where we could had a much higher, you know, the much greater chance of getting a job that would pay well. We could help our families. I think all three of us would do that, no question. And I think that a lot of people do that, and I think they do that without being a drain on benefit system. I never implicated that that was the case. I merely said that they. Some that obviously there is, if you're going to let people into the country as opposed to no people in the country, there's going to be less jobs. I don't think that's even a question. Like, surely that, I mean, obviously, you know, the people are going to come in and create jobs through creating businesses, but I don't think that's going to even out totally.
Well, I mean, British people don't want the jobs that immigrants are taking, also.
Yeah, no, I know, I agree with that, but the jobs are still there. Like, that, I'm not
And
saying,
also,
I'm not getting
not
into
only
this
that,
issue, I'm just.
not only that, immigrants put far more money than they take out, in terms of the economy. They
Yeah, no, I
put a
completely
lot
agree
of
with that
money
too.
in,
I
which
completely
then
agree
the
with that.
government can use to create jobs. So, I mean, the whole jobs argument is completely
I was
invalid.
literally playing devil's advocate,
Okay.
with regard to the strong economy, weak economy kind of thing. Because I think it is true, like we do get us and Germany with possibly the two, I'd say the two strongest economies in the EU. Is that true? I'm not huge. I'm not very big on economy.
Well, the British economy is growing faster now.
Yeah. And like, you know, so, and we get a huge amount of immigration. Germany have much higher, I think they've got 3 times the level of immigrants coming in than we do, but they are a much bigger country. But yeah. Does anyone have anything else to say on the topic? I think we all have general consensus, apart from this issue
Yeah, pretty
with
much.
regulation.
We're all kind of middle class liberal opinion.
Well, some of us have an immigrant's perspective, and I think that I am very unhappy with the current immigration policy. I would just
Yeah,
like to
fair
put
enough.
that out.
I think that we should wrap it up and then do another podcast next week
Okay.
about the politics of the election, the actual political parties.
Yeah, that's cool. Oh, and analyze the parties, yeah. Okay, so there you have it, folks. Next week we're gonna go over the political parties, what they bring to the table, who we think is gonna do well next week. And apart from that, we might even bring a guest on. Should we bring a guest on?
I think that would be
We have to.
fantastic.
Yeah, we could have it. We could definitely have a guest. We'll have to thoroughly probe them and do background checks and all sort. No, I'm joking. But yeah, I think that had a nice change of pace. If you guys want a guest, or you guys have any ideas of topics, this is the listeners, by the way, listeners, if you guys have any idea of topics, or if you want a guest, if you like the show, if you've got any suggestions, please leave it in the comments below. As for the rest of us, I think we're out of here.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for listening, guys.